Hello, nerds, and welcome to The Captain's Quarters, the unofficial Star Trek rewatch podcast where we are rewatching the entire Star Trek franchise, starting at the beginning of the official chronology. We've made it all the way through Star Trek Enterprise, and we're just getting started in Star Trek Discovery. My name is Gabe, and I'm with my co-captain, Jason. Make it so, Jason.
Cheers, buddy. How are you?
Good. What are you drinking there?
I've got... What a... Oh, this is a lychee tea.
Oh.
So it's a lychee-infused tea.
What is lychee?
Oh, it's a... Lychee is an Asian... Southeast Asian... Asian fruit? An Asian fruit. Can't really describe it unless you've had it. It's got a hard red shell, and then you peel away the skin shell, and then inside there's a silver gray flesh that surrounds a seed, and it's soft and juicy, and you eat everything except for the seed. It's really good.
Did you juice it yourself?
No. So... The tea company, they dry it along with the tea leaves, and then it kind of blooms with it. So
does it have like medicinal benefit or anything? Or?
No. It's just...
You just enjoy the taste?
Yeah. Okay. Because I love the fruit.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah, I'm just drinking the Whole Foods brand sparkling water, as always.
You got natural flavor?
No, it's just pure.
Okay, nice.
Yeah. So, I drink a shocking amount of this stuff. If it ever comes out that there's like forever chemicals or something, I'm going to be the first one down, man. I'll be the first one dead.
The only thing that I can think of is that the acidity... of the sparkling water is gonna eat away at your enamel on your teeth, but you got pearly white, so it probably doesn't matter.
Yeah, I've been blessed with very good enamel. Like, I have no cavities.
Oh, good. Oh, awesome.
Yeah. So, anyway, hey, so today we're talking about Star Trek Discovery Season 1. Episode 5, called Choose Your Pain. Keeping the streak alive with interesting titles of these episodes.
Can I just mention, there's a character in this episode, and it's interesting, this is the first episode that it's not named after the character in the show.
Huh. Okay.
Yeah.
Explain yourself. Say more about
this. So, to not give away too much, even though we're going to dive into it in just a second, one of my favorite names, Harcourt.
Okay.
Harcourt Fenton Mudd. This is the first episode that we see Mr. Harry Mudd, and we don't have an episode that it's, you know, because the episodes in the other series, it's usually I, Mudd, Mudd's women, Mudd's passion, and this is not, clearly, because this is Choose Your Pain, not named after our favorite, one of our favorite swindler, scoundrel, caddish gentlemen.
So Mudd is a recurring character?
Yeah, and this is, I guess, this is a backstory kind of precursor to who Harcourt Fenton Mudd is. And can I just say, if my significant other, better half, ever have a boy, I've always definitely wanted to push Harcourt.
Wow. Harcourt.
Yeah, Harcourt Fenton Mudd.
My goodness. Hold on a second though. Okay,
yeah,
so
go ahead.
In this episode, Harry Mudd is played by Rainn Wilson, Dwight from The Office, right?
Oh, is that who that is?
Yeah.
I recognize him, but I've never watched American Office. Sorry.
Oh my gosh.
I've watched a couple episodes.
Wow. Okay.
I prefer the British one.
Well, of course you do. Says the guy who calls it football.
It is football.
So wait, did Rainn Wilson play Mud in any of the other series?
No.
Okay.
No. It was, I forget his name, because we're going back to the 1960s in the 1960s and the 1970s.
Wow.
So no.
I had no idea that this was a recurring character.
Mm-hmm.
That's cool. I like that. Well, first things first, Jason. Is this the first instance of Star Trek media where an F-bomb is dropped?
Yes. That I can remember, yeah.
Were you blown away? By not
one, I was blown away and then blown away like a millisecond later because it was dropped twice.
Mm-hmm.
And I get the excitement, and I get that we're in, you know, the 21st century of Star Trek, and this is a new, you know, I'm just the old man that has to get off his rocking chair and have to accept because they do it in Picard. They do. They do swear a little bit in Picard. Do they
F-bombs?
Swear in Strange New Worlds? Yeah, I think so.
Wow.
Yeah, I think so.
See, I am really surprised to hear that.
I know.
Because this series, Discovery, is intentionally pushing the envelope, trying to kind of break the mold, trying to whatever. But Picard, I feel like... even though I've never seen it, I've only seen commercials, but I know the cast, I just feel like they were trying to be like super traditional.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah, you know what? I think it's now the cast saying, you know what? It's 20 years later. Let's have some fun with it a little bit. And yeah, I think they're swearing in Picard. Yeah.
Wow. Okay. I'm not a prude. I don't care. But I was like, whoa, I'm...
Yeah, me too.
But not only just because it was Star Trek, because I thought that this was like a television show that aired on cable. Like, can you just say the F-bomb on whatever channel, CBS or whatever this airs on? What does it air on, do you know?
Did Discovery come out on... Oh, man. I don't remember. I don't know what it first aired on. I want to say. I don't know what channel it premiered on, or what television station.
And then I wonder, like, let's say it was CBS. Do you think they did like a different edit?
Probably. I would. Yeah, you would think.
Because isn't that an FTC thing?
I don't know. I haven't watched syndicated national television in a long time.
Syndicated sounds right. Yeah.
Yeah, I haven't watched. Have you? Can you swear on national television?
I couldn't even tell you the last syndicated show I watched. I have no idea.
Okay.
It's been years and years and years. You know what it probably was? It's probably The Walking Dead.
Okay.
And I think I do seem to recall them dropping S-bombs and being like, oh, I guess it's a new era. You can just say this on TV now. And it's because people's opinions change and their sensitivities changed. And I think they skew towards more vulgar. I don't think we get less vulgar as a society. So I don't know.
So I just did a quick Google search. It premiered on CBS.
Okay, yeah.
So it must have been bleeped out or...
A different edit or something?
That's a different edit? Huh. Yeah, something like that. Yeah, I don't know. They well, George Lucas did.
Oh, no. okay, so synopsis is that this season has been all about this spore drive and this tardigrade.
Tardigrade, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Animal that looks like one of those microscopic bear things, right?
Mm-hmm. A tardigrade.
Yeah. And it has a symbiotic connection with these spores. There's this, like, infinite spore network spanning the universe, so that Star Trek, or this USS Discovery, is able to basically instantly travel anywhere in the universe. So, leading up to this episode, they've been perfecting it. They have perfected it, kind of. And it's made them a dominant player in this war. The Klingons have sort of figured this out. They end up kidnapping the captain, Captain Lorca. That's where Lorca meets Harry Mudd, is in the Klingon prison. Lorca's arc in this episode is him and another Starfleet officer, Ash Tyler, and the dynamics with Harry Mudd and how they kind of escape that situation and end up getting into an escape pod. And then on the Discovery, they've been using this tardigrade to do this spore drive travel. But it turns out that the lead character, Burnham, has discovered that it's taxing the tardigrade to the point where it's basically going to die. Every time they jump, it goes through extreme distress. And what to make matters worse, they determine that it's sentient. But in charge of the Discovery is the alien whose name starts with an S.
Saru. Yeah.
He's like, I don't care. We need to save Lorca. Put the beast at risk. And so, in a surprise twist, the main scientist who was working on spore technology, Stamets, is that his name?
Yep.
Stamets. Yeah, injects himself with like this like genome that so his body like mimics the tardigrade, and then he then becomes the symbiote with the spore drive, which enables them to jump, save Lorca, etc. But the interesting thing there was that sorry, I forgot the alien's name.
Saru.
He says,
go with it, buddy. Just run with it.
Saru. He says, I don't care that it's sentient. We have a job to do.
Yeah.
But he later, after they've resolved everything, he tells Burnham, the beast is sentient. Let it go. So Burnham and her roommate let go the tardigrade into space, and it appears to heal almost instantly when it's released. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then the final part of it is that Stamets is looking in a mirror at the end, and when he walks away from the mirror, there's still a version of him looking in the mirror, and it's mm-hmm. kind of indicating that perhaps his DNA has been now messed with to a degree that perhaps he's existing in multiple planes. Maybe he's like still kind of exist in this subspace where this spore network is. So that was it. And we got a couple F-bombs, which was surprising. And apparently we got a little bit of backstory of a recurring character.
Mm-hmm.
And I know you like to hear my opinion first. Yeah, so...
I do.
Yeah. So, one thing that this... I like this series. It's good. I like it. One thing that it keeps trying to do, though, it really wants Burnham to be the outsider, the anti-hero. And mm-hmm. it keeps, like, progressively more and more saying that she's the root cause of the war with the Klingons. And I just don't... I just don't buy it. Like, specifically, she was advocating for the Vulcan Hello, which was a preemptive strike.
Yeah.
They did not do that. And
no.
They were there in the presence of the Klingons. They didn't listen to her. And then the war started. And I don't see how that was her fault. If, like, I could see, like, if she had accomplished, like, if she had convinced them to do the Vulcan Hello and then the war started, then I could see them arguing that it's her fault. But, like, at no point did she steer the course of history. I mean, she did commit mutiny, and that added to, like, the confusion and, like, made things more challenging. But, like, I don't think there's a causal link between her actions and the war. And so I'm hoping you can correct me if I'm wrong, because I don't want to miss something.
I don't disagree with you at all. The only thing that I would say is that I guess have a discussion about it. It's that, you know, I guess in this universe, in this Star Trek, in this whatever they're trying to do, and because I agree with you, I think they are making her the scapegoat, the, you know, the anti-hero, mm-hmm. you know, however, you know, you put it brilliantly. But I guess in this time, there needs to be that person that does play the scapegoat, right? And she's the easy one, right?
Yeah.
Because she was Starfleet's only mutineer, excuse me. And you know, now they're thrust into a war.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously without knowing the Klingons and that side of what they were going to do anyways, it's easy to pin... I mean, right, it's easy to pin something negative, right, mm-hmm. on somebody.
Yeah.
You know, we're always looking for that a lot of times. You know, a lot of times society is looking for that, right?
Sure.
Who's to blame? Who's at fault? You know, who effed up? And then, oh, it is their fault. And it's easy that it's, you know, Starfleet's only mutineer.
Mm-hmm. But doesn't it weaken her character, though, the fact that she wouldn't clarify or stand up for herself, be like, actually, no, I didn't. I advocated for this, they didn't go for it, and then this happened. Like, wouldn't she stand up for herself?
Yeah, and that's what I'm wrestling with as well. That, you know, why wouldn't she say, no, this is not how the events actually went down.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the Klingons fired first, or whatever the case might be. I hope they unpack that, because there's a lot to unpack here. I mean, mm-hmm. you talk about armchair psychology. All of these characters. Holy cow. I think, you know, what's gotten me interested is that all of these characters are very antithetical of what you think of many Star Trek characters that you kind of love.
Mm-hmm.
And I could see myself loving them in a very different way than other characters you see on, you know, the other Star Trek characters. Picard, Kirk, Spock, Sisko, Janeway, Chakotay, all of them.
Yeah.
Because they are so... because there's so many human elements to it, like, you know, and the character building that I missed from Enterprise, mm-hmm. we're kind of getting here.
Yeah.
We're getting it.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. You know,
Lorca's from another universe, man.
Yeah. Oh, man, that snippet of backstory that we get,
yeah.
that he kills his crew.
To save them.
To yeah. save them from being tortured, that to me, I'm like, What'd you think? Because I'm like, dude.
Yeah.
I get it. Wow. That's, oof.
Yeah, I think you know my answer there, which is that what if the instant the Klingons docked with your ship, they're one of the clasps breaks and the vacuum of space sucks all the Klingons out and you're miraculously saved. Turns out, you know what I mean? I feel like I'm never willing to like abandon hope and do something really evil in the name of that. So to me, I always want to leave room for a miracle to prove me wrong.
Yeah.
So that was like definitely a Star Trek moment there, but there was a more ambiguous one, which we talked about, which was, do we save Lorca or do we risk this tardigrade's life?
Yeah.
And, you know, Saru chose risking the life. Obviously, Stamets and Burnham were not okay with that. But that was definitely the Star Trek moment for me right there.
Yeah, there were a couple, and I want to build on that. There were a couple of moments that I was like, you know, I wrote it down. I was like, I couldn't believe that Starfleet would allow the Admiral says that in the Admiral's briefing with Captain Lorca that, you know, Starfleet is on a massive search, a massive hunt for more tardigrades. Because if they can develop the spore drive, they're obviously going to need more tardigrades.
Mm-hmm.
And even in times of war, I couldn't imagine the bulk of the Federation, or the bulk of Starfleet, excuse me, saying, okay, we're going to basically enslave.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Animal testing, you know, sentient or not. You know, even in times of war, right? You know, inter arma silent leges, or whatever that expression is. You know, in times of war, the innocent fall silent, or however that expression goes. I forget. It's a Star Trek Voyager. It's a Star Trek Deep Space Nine episode, but it plays well here, and I totally botched it, but to that degree, yeah. I couldn't imagine Starfleet, let alone Saru.
Right, exactly.
Even though, but the thing is, though, at the same time, right, he's trying to save his captain.
And yeah, that's the thing. He's very, like, adherent to chain of command. That's, like, sacred to him. And that's one of the big problems he has with Burnham, is her inability to, like, listen to direct orders. And like, he's the opposite of that. So that was, I think, a big conflict for him there, which was...
Yeah.
Do I complete my mission, or did I do what's right? And I think he erred on the side of following orders.
Yeah. And then, you know, I guess, and then this was a really interesting episode, because we got to delve into Saru a little bit, right? And I was really taken aback and really impressed. And what I mean by that is I was really impressed, is that the word, I guess, that he had the self-awareness to start a computer, a captain's log, basically.
Yeah.
And go, he had the self-awareness to ask what were, you know, the
couple Easter eggs, I guess, there.
Yeah. A little bit of the, like, you know, the traits and qualities of what makes a good captain. And the Easter egg you're talking about, the list of names, April, Jonathan Archer, Matt Decker.
Pike was there,
Philippa,
too.
Philippa, Georgiou, yeah, Captain Christopher Foyt, yeah.
April?
Captain Robert April is the first captain of the Enterprise.
What?
Before Pike. Yeah. Before Pike, before Kirk.
What series or movie is that from?
So that goes back to the original series, and then it builds into the animated series. Because at some point in time in the 60s, Gene Roddenberry says he creates this character and it's him. It's the first captain of the Enterprise. And it's Robert April back in the 70s. You know, it's stylized after him in the animated series.
Okay.
But now in Strange New Worlds, he's an African-American character. So it's a little bit different, which is great.
But is he like a contemporary of Saru?
Or No. He precedes Christopher Pike as captain of the Enterprise. He's the first captain of the Enterprise. Obviously not the NX-01 because that's Jonathan Archer. But the NCC-1701 Constitution class Starship Enterprise is the first he's the first captain.
Okay, but is Strange New Worlds for sure chronologically after Discovery?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And yet this character Saru references as one of the greats. So was it purely an Easter egg? It was like non-canon Easter egg or something?
So I think in this, so April, even before Pike. So canon, but also Easter egg. Yeah. So we know that April was the captain of the first captain of the Enterprise, and then Christopher Pike.
But chronologically, because Saru is quoting this person as one of the greats.
Yeah.
But he hasn't happened yet. He hasn't. The Enterprise.
He has. No, he has.
Chronologically?
That's what I'm saying. So chronologically. So it's April on the Enterprise. In the middle, I wish I was Doc Brown and I had the little timeline thing.
Yeah.
So in the middle, it's Saru, Discovery, Shenzhou, whatever.
Okay.
At the same time, it's Christopher Pike.
Mm-hmm.
So they'd have to create a whole new series.
Got it. Specifically okay. Talk about, so Strange New Worlds is not about April. It's about Pike, is what you're saying.
It's about Pike, yeah. Got it. Okay. It's about the lost days of Captain Pike.
Now I get it. Okay. I'm caught up now.
Okay.
And so you're talking about the captain's log, the test that Saru put himself through of computer, compare me to these greats. How am I doing? But I think he ended up not getting the results, right?
Yeah, he ends up not listening to him.
Yeah.
Which was interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think we're supposed to take there's character growth there because he was doing the by the book thing by initiating that test, but then he ended up.
Well, but don't you also think that he kind of also see this is how I took it, and I took it as he got validation from Burnham.
Yeah, right. He did, but like,
and that was good enough.
Right, but before Saru 1.0, that wouldn't have been good enough. He would have needed some sort of rigid, formal test to give him that validation.
Yeah.
But he's kind of like following his heart a little bit more now.
Yeah.
Instead of his head, I guess.
Yeah. I guess. I can't wait to hear more.
Okay. I thought the whole Klingon arc was cool. The prison. I did not like how with Laurel in the last episode, I thought they were establishing a love interest of Vok. And I thought she was going to be Man, I thought she could have ended up being the main antagonist of the whole show. I thought maybe she was like Vok was the king, she was the queen, and then she would end up like being like Daenerys from Game of Thrones or something.
Yeah.
And they did a pretty quick about face in this one, and she was very different in this episode already, and done for.
She didn't die.
What happened to her?
So
she gets shot in the head, right?
No. She gets shot. So he Lorca basically fires a phaser or a disruptor at the being, and it ricochets, and it just burns her face a bit. Okay.
But okay, so yeah, she doesn't die, but she doesn't seem to have like, where's Vok in all this?
I have no idea. And so,
like, she seemed to be, like, pretty devoted to him, but now she's
Were you disappointed that she's got a boy toy in Ash Tyler?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, that the boy toy thing that was very counter to the Laurel we met, who was, like, Vok's, like, confidant or whatever. It was just... I don't know. So I was a little disappointed in that.
It was interesting. I was like, okay, all right, cool. Way to wield your power there and, you know, satiate your needs with a human, weakling human.
It was a very different version of her than the last episode.
And to your point, not incredibly honorable.
Yeah. I felt like she was kind of one of the more moral characters of the last episode. But now she's just like this, like, crazed Klingon warlord now. Just weird. I don't know. I didn't really get it. Seemed like it should have just been a different Klingon.
Yeah.
But other than that, enjoyed it very much. Love Saru's admission to Burnham about how he's just like hurt by her, that he's not like out to get her. He's not treating her unfairly. He's just like angry with her for what she did and how, because he actually like really liked Captain Giorgio and what Burnham did. He like blames her for Giorgio's death, but then also just says like, he's envious that she got to work alongside Giorgio. And that he had been banking on Burnham kind of ascending through the ranks and being her own captain and thus opening up a roster spot that he was planning on taking. So he's just really hurt by all that. And it was just a good moment because it took a lot for him to do that, to kind of let his guard down and like actually like speak from his heart.
Yeah.
And, because I think before, you just took any opportunity that he could to, like, assassinate her character.
Yes.
Just kind of acting out. And now he's just, like, kind of speaking from his heart. So it was a nice moment. I enjoyed it.
Do you think that's growth of being a captain in that moment? And
yeah, I think so.
Being the leader of growth?
Yeah, sure. Yeah. So, I don't know. What do you think, man?
I really like this episode. And I want to point out a couple of moments that really stood out to me. The first one that we haven't talked about yet is the Burnham Tilly. There is a discussion in the mess, I guess, in the officer's mess.
Mm-hmm.
And... you know, it's the, and Burnham to the effect of, it's not you, it's me. Right? Until he goes, oh, it's glad it's, because it's usually me, but I'm glad it's not. And Burnham opens up to her and says, you know, I've got a lot of time on my hands and I get to dwell and think about, you know, her actions and, you know, basically, you know, she's this, I don't know if it's workaholic, or if it's, you know, if it's the Vulcan training or both, that now that she's not super busy, she has time to think about, you know, the tardigrade and how the spore drive is having an impact on it, and et cetera, et cetera. And it's kind of, you know, she's kind of empathizing with it, you know, and it ties back to the beginning scene where it's the tardigrade and she feels its pain, right, in that dream sequence.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really, really interesting to see that she drowns herself in work,
mm-hmm,
in order to not tackle or to not confront her feelings or not confront her, you know, her thoughts and her emotions. And that was really interesting. I was like, wow, the workaholic, you know, avoidance kind of thing, to, you know, to work and to avoid your feelings and to avoid your emotions and to use that as a crutch. It was really, really interesting. And I'm hoping that they explore that more, because you forget that she's human sometimes, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And so she doesn't confront her feelings all the time.
No. No. Yeah, she definitely plays that, like, kind of mystic role. Like, she's so good at what she does. She's almost magical.
Yeah.
So, yeah, for her to reflect on that. Yeah, that is interesting, for sure.
And then the other thing, too, is that... And then on the opposite side of the table, you get Tilly, and she just says... You know, she's the person that says the things that you think, that mm-hmm, you're thinking about.
No filter.
But then you don't say it. Yeah, no filter. Yeah. I love that. I absolutely love that. And then, you know, and then she opens up with her vulnerabilities, right, in that same conversation, in that same dialogue. And, you know, you kind of can tell there's a little bit of lacking, a lag of confidence that needs to be, you know, kind of released out there. And I find that really interesting.
For sure. Yeah. I don't know how I feel about that character. I can't really pinpoint what her, like, strengths are. What is her specialty?
She's what, that she's Stamets' assistant in the engineering spore drive science division, I guess.
Do we get a sense of Stamets's, like, opinion of her, like, of her performance or skill set?
I don't think so.
Because they seem very different.
Yeah.
Like, extremely different.
Yeah.
And it's just hard to envision them actually working together on something.
Yeah. Because I think, again, I think I talked about this a little bit in one of the last episodes. Tilly, yeah, I'm curious if the writers wrote her with you know, maybe potentially being, you know, either socially awkward or, and I don't want to downplay this, but, because I think it would be cool if they did write it that, you know, she might be on the autism spectrum. You know, the no filter, yeah, the
right,
some of the things that you kind of associate with that. And I don't want to make light of it, but it'd be interesting if they did that.
Yeah, I didn't think of that. Maybe. Yeah, she's definitely like a space. She's very spacey.
Yeah. And she's unique.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which I think
is cool. I think it's cool.
Okay. All right.
And then the other two characters that we get to, that we kind of delve into is Stamets and the Doctor. I'm like, oh, okay. Cool.
Oh yeah, I was gonna ask you about that because, like, I know an Enterprise, so a superior was not, it was forbidden from dating one of their reports to.
Yeah.
Is there like a chain of command between these two? Or are they just totally separate? Or maybe they're equal?
Yeah, I think because they're in two separate departments, I think it's okay.
Okay. So it's
because we've only, because I think we've only delved into it a couple of times where it's like, you know, can the superior officer fall in love with a.
But even if one outranks the other in their different division, do you know what I'm saying? Like, it's it really only applies within their vertical, right?
Not necessarily. Not necessarily. I mean, if, let's say, the doctor or Stamets, one of them is acting captain, right? Mm-hmm. Let's say the entire bridge crew is incapacitated or whatever the case might be.
Yeah.
You have the doctor and Stamets. It's possible that that happens. Yeah, for sure. I don't know if it's not allowed, because they don't really get into it. It's just, you know, Starfleet officers, you know, personal relationship.
Yeah. It's a T'Pol and Tucker situation, basically.
Yeah, exactly.
Engineering versus. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. Okay.
And so when Stamets says, we're ready, you know, to, did you think that he was going to inject himself or the tardigrade?
I thought Burnham was going to inject herself.
Oh, interesting.
Because she was the only one who actually seemed to care about the thing.
Uh-huh.
Like, it's definitely like her pet, but she also is like, has a bond with it. So I thought she was going to do it. So that was a twist for me that he did it.
Oh, interesting.
And I thought Stamets was going to let her do it because he doesn't seem to be a big fan. So this is like two birds with one stone for him. So I was surprised. Because, like, he was not a nice person. Like, first episode.
Yeah, he's... Yeah.
But he's definitely...
Came off as uncaring, for sure.
Yeah. That was a very selfless thing he did, for sure.
Yeah.
So... Very surprised that he did that.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. What rating would you give it, Jason?
Ooh, I'm going to give this a 3 pips. I'm going to give this a 3 pips. I think this is a Commander's level episode. This was really cool.
Okay.
You know, like I said, you know, we got to delve into Lorca's history, Saru's character.
Yeah.
Stamets, the Doctor, Tilly, Burnham. We get little snippets of their background, of who they are. And that's what I love about this franchise.
Mm-hmm.
Is that we get that. And then we get Harry Mudd. Harry Mudd. Oh yeah. And you know, the actor, did you say Rainn Wilson?
Mm-hmm.
He really brought a different kind of scoundrel to this one, to this Harry Mudd.
Okay.
This Harry Mudd is a little bit more devious than the other Harry Mudd that we get to meet.
Okay.
He's very kind of self-centered, narcissistic.
Sure. Yeah.
Vain. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
A survivor.
Yeah. Definitely a survivor. Definitely a survivor.
Yeah.
And it's an interesting to see a little bit of his backstory. And I hope that we see him again.
Yeah.
I hope he keeps his promise to Lorca.
Yeah, for sure. All right. Anything else with this one?
The other thing, I can't wait to see what Lorca says about what happens to Burnham and or Saru or whomever Lorca comes back and says, "What? Where's the tardigrade?"
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
And then I think, and then to go back to your other, thing that you talked about briefly, I do think Stamets, part of him is still in the mycelial network. Oh, I do.
Yeah.
Completely agree with you on that one.
Yeah. At the beginning of this episode, was it a dream sequence where Burnham saw herself in the cage?
Yeah.
But do you think there was some truth to that? That like part of her is in the tardigrade?
Probably.
I thought they were going to do like a mind meld thing where like...
Yeah.
I thought they were going to call back to the mind melding of like that.
She do that?
Remember how they said... part of Sarek's Katra is like in her, and now she can speak to him like across the stars. Remember that?
Yeah, I do, but
because they mind melded or something.
Yeah. Huh.
And so I thought they were gonna do something with this, like where they're gonna like have like she'll randomly be able to like summon the beast. You know what I mean?
Like yeah,
like because they have like this bond.
The bond.
Like, her Katra is in his, and so she'll be in a bind. And she'll need like, you know how, like in Star Wars.
Reach out through the Force.
Yeah. He'll be like, Ben. You know what I mean? Like, she'll be like, on her last breath, they'll be like, tardigrade. And then it'll like come, it'll teleport across the universe and it'll come save her. And she'll like ride it or something.
Ripper is Anakin Skywalker at the end of Ahsoka, kind of watching over her a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, it's all good. Speaking of Star Wars.
Yes, sir.
Ahsoka Season 1 has wrapped.
Yes.
With, to me, an underwhelming episode. And spoiler alerts.
Underwhelming?
Yeah. Spoiler alerts
for
anybody.
Oh, no.
If you haven't seen Ahsoka, go ahead and turn this off now.
Oh no, underwhelming.
Yeah. I don't know, like, anyone can use the Force.
What do you mean?
Sabine can just, you know, use the Force just like any old Jedi now. And
she's a Jedi, though.
But she wasn't, she was never selected. We've always had Jedi who were selected because they showed an aptitude for the Force. Sabine never did. She just was like, hey, let's see if we can make a Jedi out of anybody. And turns out you can. And turns out it's an extremely powerful one. And it's kind of like the last Jedi at the end when the kid, like, grabs
the Force, the
broom.
With the mop.
Or the broom of the Force. And it's the whole idea is that, like, anybody is... Jedi and everyone is
one of the Rebels episodes. I thought one of the Rebel episodes we did find out that she does have Force abilities, and that's why Ahsoka takes her as an apprentice. No? Am I not remembering that correctly?
You could be right. I just remember she had the Darksaber. She needed to learn how to use it, and who better to teach you than a Jedi how to use a lightsaber? So that's all I remember. I don't know.
Okay.
Again, I didn't really pay attention to that show as much as I wanted to.
Okay. Because I think my memory says Ahsoka wouldn't have trained her if she didn't have some Force abilities.
Yeah, I don't see. To me, it was all about the lightsaber. It was all about combat training, and then it evolved into more. Oh. But could be wrong.
Okay. Yeah. So what are the other things that made you say, oh, this is kind of underwhelming? I'm curious.
I don't know. It didn't have any of like the payoffs that I thought maybe I was hinting at, that it was hinting at. I just
they
thought...
had. So you wanted them to come back to the galaxy sooner.
I don't know what I wanted. It just seemed It seemed to be leading towards something big. And I don't necessarily know if they're just like, gotta see season two or gotta see the movie or whatever, or if that was just misdirection. Like, even like Balin's big quest. I mean, it has something to do with the Mortis gods, we know, because he was standing on the big statue of the father. And but, you know, like, the father's dead and the son is dead. And...
But
what does the statue have to do with... It's just a statue. Like, is it a force-wielding statue?
But did you notice that it's missing the... Oh, boy. I'm going to butcher the name. Abelisoth? Absaloth? That woman, the woman with the endless teeth thing, right?
No, I don't know what you're talking about.
Really? Oh, yeah. Okay. So, oh boy, I'm gonna sound like a complete idiot because I don't remember.
Are you talking about the mother or something?
Yeah.
Or the daughter? I mean, the daughter.
Yeah, the daughter, and that's who.
What do you mean it was missing?
So there are three statues, right?
Okay.
And so I think you see the father, right? Mortis.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
And then you see the missing part of the son. Is that right?
Okay.
On the other side.
Okay.
What we're missing on the stage right of the father,
okay,
is the Abeloth, I think, the beloved queen,
okay,
of the stars. And I think that's, you know, it's weak. It's a weak theory, but I think one of the reasons that Ahsoka and Sabine are still trapped in that galaxy is that we're going to see the return of the Abeloth. And I think that's what Balin's skull is feeling.
Okay.
That's all I got.
Okay. All right. Well, this place obviously has a deep connection with the Mortis gods. And so I wonder if Anakin actually became the father like the father wanted Anakin to be.
Oh!
Posthumously, but I can't see why that would stop anything, him being dead. If anything, that might strengthen it. That was all I could think, because we saw Anakin at the end. He's obviously there as a ghost, watching over Ahsoka, but maybe he like lives there now. Maybe he is the father.
Oh, interesting. I just took it as here's the master saying, good job, Snips. Good job.
It could just be that, yeah. But I was thinking like maybe the reason why when we saw Anakin before he was like oscillating between good and bad, like maybe he's the son and the father, and he's like trying to maintain the balance, and he's being ripped in two directions.
Yeah. Interesting.
I don't know. And maybe somehow Balin knows this and he's trying to tap into it somehow, or I don't know. But we have no clue. It could be nothing.
It could be. Oh, I have no idea.
I was totally wrong about the placement before. So this is all post Ahsoka meeting Grogu. And I totally missed that. I thought this was pre Grogu. And the reason I thought that was because Ahsoka and Morgan had battled in The Mandalorian. And just the way that I read it, I thought that that was like Ahsoka's, that's how she discovered she needed the star map. But that was her saying, well, it was that, just not in the way I thought, the way I thought it. I just, I had things mixed up. And so now I'm just also like, I just think it's weird that even though I'm not a huge fan of all this crossover, I do think it's weird that Grogu isn't part of this conversation of,
I'm glad. I'm kind of glad he's not.
But you're glad from a stylistic, like perspective, like this is a standalone thing and it's like its own thing. But
yeah,
I just think rationally it doesn't make sense to me. It's like, I think,
I'm curious why
I don't believe that Grogu is just a Mandalorian now. I don't think he's just a Mandalorian. I think he's destined to be some huge part of the Force. And here, this series is all about the big parts of the Force. We have the father of the Force, and it just seems like silly that Grogu wouldn't even be mentioned because he's the strongest M count ever. And it just seems like he would be part of this to some degree. And particularly how popular the character is.
Didn't you also say that you think he's going to get offed at some point?
I do, yeah. Yeah, I still do, yeah.
Okay.
Because I thought maybe Baylan's thing involved Grogu somehow. Like, somehow he was going to use Grogu to do something.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Huh. Did not think about that. The only thing for me was like, and I saw it like after it ended and you go online and, you know, people are talking, obviously, that the Abeloth, you know, the bringer of chaos,
okay,
you know, she's like, that's who Baylan's called. And can I just say, boy, however they in whatever direction they move, finding a successor to Ray Stevenson, boy howdy, that's gonna be challenging.
He's amazing.
That's gonna be a hill to climb.
Yeah. Yeah, he's amazing.
Yeah. I mean, I'm like, wow, you know, that British, Irish, sorry. I think he was Irish. So I'm not gonna say British. That Irish understatedness to his acting. Boy, oof.
Yeah.
That's going to be a hard nut to crack.
Yeah.
To find a successor to him.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. You know, and I do wonder if they're going to keep the character and put a mask on him or something. I hope they don't.
Yeah.
I hope they don't Grand Moff Tarkin him.
Yeah. But I hope they do it in a respectful way.
Yeah. Who knows?
Grand Moff Tarkin.
So, yeah, that was it, though. That's all.
That's all. Really? That's it?
Star Wars, yeah.
I mean, you know, because it's interesting that they haven't announced, I mean, to my knowledge, unless one of the new things is something that they're going to be in and it's not called Ahsoka, right? Like one of the movies or the television show, another, you know, Disney Plus streaming. I'm like, I want more. I'm like, you know, Thrawn just gets back and boy, do they, I mean, I bet... So the one knock is that I have. Okay, so how do you feel like if you, you know, you were elevated to the head of your class.
Okay.
And then 10 minutes later, you get offed.
Okay.
Morgan Elsbeth. I mean, I'm like, really? They killed her? Oh, come on.
Yeah. Hmm.
You know, she just gets Mother Talzin's sword. Talzin's sword.
Okay.
And then 10 minutes later, you know, she's dead. Unless yeah. they bring her back in some
yeah, that, there you go. That's the thing, is these are the resurrectors, so it doesn't matter
right.
if she's dead. She could be resurrected anytime.
I kind of thought that. I was like, well, yeah. but this is, you know,
the and her of being resurrected. Her, yeah, her being resurrected would give her a haunting quality that would, like, almost make it better for
true,
TV.
True, true, true.
She'd be an evil ghost.
True, true.
So I think she'll come think, back.
What do you think Thrawn's plan is?
Well, I mean, I'm pretty sure in the novel, which, by the way, had its, like, 30-year anniversary or something recently.
Wow.
He brought back some version of Palpatine in the novel, I think.
Ugh.
So, I mean, I hate to say it, buddy, but...
Come on. Please. No.
Yeah.
No. Come on. No. Oh, I'm so Palpatine out.
I know.
It's gotta be. You got the most brilliant, one of the most brilliant Imperial military strategists, and you're gonna bring back up a team now.
Yeah, but you know, that's what's interesting about him is that you don't know what they would do in a power vacuum, like, because. Even he's obviously obsessed with excellence, mm-hmm. but what does he do in the absence of someone to be excellent for? Like, he's the perfect
himself,
the right hand man. But yeah, has he shown any desire to, you know, supplant Palpatine? Like, every time we saw him before, there was an emperor,
mm-hmm.
and so he never seemed to, like. He was like the antithesis of like double crossing the emperor.
You think he's the guy behind the guy, not
yeah.
wanting to be the guy?
Yeah, I don't recall him ever showing that he like thought he should be the emperor or something. He was always like he wanted to be the perfect strategist for the emperor and wanted.
Interesting.
Did you think the opposite or something different?
So, no, I don't think the opposite at all, but I think in a power vacuum, because this is kind of factional, right? Mm-hmm. The Empire is splintered and it's, you know, I think even more dangerous because they're cells, basically. They can be terrorist cells. The remnants of the Empire, whatever you want to call it. I think okay. it makes him more dangerous, and I think he could thrive in this kind of situation. You know, leading
for
his own... Yeah, leading his okay. own splintered cell.
Okay.
Of whatever is left of the Empire. Because how many times does he say, you know... The Empire Forever, whatever expression that was. So I gotta ask you, are they rewriting? Are they writing out the sequels?
No, I don't think so.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So you do think this is going to follow, and we're going to end up with, you know, Last Jedi, Force Awakens. We're going down that path. Okay.
Yeah, I do.
Okay.
And then, so I also was Googling Heir to the Empire. I don't think I was right. I don't think Palpatine has anything to do with it. Yeah. I definitely...
I know Dave Filoni can go in his own direction, obviously. So, you know... But to your point, he kind of has followed some of the original Thrawn things, right?
Yeah, okay. So, in the expanded universe works, Dark Empire, that is where Palpatine is, like, cloned.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So, different story altogether.
Okay, okay. Woo!
Yeah. So. No, yeah, I think so. Because someone had also said that he wanted to do a movie of the novel. Or some version of the novel. Heir to the Empire.
Filoni did.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Okay. Because I know... Because I saw an interview briefly that he's trying to incorporate a lot of the original, you know, characteristics, traits, or whatever to Thrawn when it made sense, and if it made sense. And I, from that, I was like, oh, he's trying to respect the original creator of Grand Admiral Thrawn. Thrawn. Blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, the only thing I know about that is that in the behind the scenes of Rebels, Filoni was talking about the role of the expanded universe these days back then.
Uh-huh.
And he was saying, mm-hmm. What we do is, like, sometimes we have a character idea and we, like, look to the expanded universe. Like, in the case of Rebels, they built this, like, brilliant strategist, and they're like, well, we already have one of those. We have Thrawn, so let's just, like, instead of making a new character, let's just...
A new character,
Thrawn.
Yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Let's just use Thrawn. But cool. That's the extent of my knowledge there, so...
Okay.
As far as Filoni's, you know, whatever he's doing with other stuff besides his own works, I don't know. So... But you could argue that, I mean, a lot of his stuff is kind of like a take on the super early Star Wars.
Definitely.
Like, drafts and stuff. So in that regard, like, he's, like, very heavy on the... Because that, until he flushed it out, it was basically expanded universe. It was just,
right.
Like,
okay.
Existed as interviews and notes from George Lucas.
Yeah. Gotcha. Okay. Oh, cool. Okay, cool. Because I know Disney said no to the expanded universe, and it's interesting to see now that's like, you know, Filoni is, we are going to use some of it.
Yeah.
So
it's a great character, though, for sure.
Season 2 or a movie? How would you like to see this?
Mm.
Or a season 2 move into a larger movie?
I hope it's just four seasons. Yeah, I hope it's just seasons. I don't want to hear everybody's griping about the movies. It won't do well financially. It's too specific. There's already a bunch of complaints about how people, quote, don't know what's going on because they didn't watch Rebels. And then to, like, build a movie off of that, I think that sentiment would still be there. And with movies, they have to go gangbusters to make it worth it. You know, you're going to spend $200-300 million or whatever. You're going to need it to make $700 million. And then I think You know, I don't think that the last Star Wars movie did very well. So I think it was like the worst performing at the box office because people were like dropping off and the sentiment was like, whoa, we're like in danger of having a box office bomb here.
Yeah, I think you're right.
What do I know, though? I don't know. Just my... me rambling.
I mean, you're the bigger Star Wars fan, so...
All right, yeah. So, okay. What about you? Movie or season 2?
I would love to see 1 or 2 more seasons.
Yeah.
For sure.
I still want Ezra to be evil, and I was hoping that him, like, not touching the lightsaber somehow explained him being evil.
Interesting.
Like a vampire who can't touch a cross or something. If he had touched it, it would have revealed. But then he went and built a lightsaber, and then I don't know.
I thought that was kind of a really beautiful moment where he kind of built it in the style of his former master.
Yeah.
Which was cool. And Hu Yang having that piece. Mm-hmm. I'm like, that's cool. Yeah. That's cool.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah. By the way, do you know Hu Yang's like 25,000 years old?
I did not know that.
And he's
did they really trained, come up with the age?
Yeah, he's trained like all the Jedi. Like, he knows every Jedi.
Well, I mean, it is David Tennant, so he is one of my favorite doctors, if not my favorite doctor. So
nice. All right, buddy. Anything else?
That's cool, though. Nope. I think we got it.
Okay. Everyone, thanks for watching. Thanks for listening. And we have a Patreon now. So if you join our Patreon for the low price of $2 a month, I mean, that's nothing. That's absolutely nothing. $2 a month, you get early access to these shows, so a week early. So, and also you get to support your favorite Star Trek podcast. So
yeah, right.
Check it out. The link is in our X profile, and follow us on all the podcast platforms and subscribe to us on YouTube. And we appreciate it, Jason. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you so much, buddy. As always.
Yeah, and until next time, live long, prosper.
Love being in the ready room. Ugh.